reading from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Volume 1, Chapter 5, Text 1. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Si Parikshit Uvacha. Tattasi Narada Harsa. Parakranta Sanartanam. Kurudesham Gato Davan. Rajadanyam Pravishtavam. Sri Parikshit said, Sri Narada, besides himself with joy, arrived dancing at the kingdom of the Kurus and raced into their capital city. Commentary: in this chapter, the Pandavas refute Narada's glorification of them by instead glorifying the Yadus, especially Uddhava. After the annihilation of Duryodhana's army at Kurukshetra, Yudhisthira assumed his rightful throne and began ruling at Hastinapur. Thus Narada went to Hastinapur to see the Pandavas. Omigana Timurandasya Dananjana Shalakaya Chaksurunmalatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Shindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama. So, greetings from Newburgh, New York, at the home of the Ravals. It's going to be a little bit challenge for me to give the class today because there's 24-hour kirtan going on, and they got these speakers blasted, and it's a little bit distracting, but I'll try to kind of plow through it. Let me get some other things here. But it's really a nice program, and seeing how many families and people just, it's all night. It started 10 o'clock yesterday morning, and it's been going till 10 o'clock. And, you know, during the summer, a lot of people are out. So you don't, and there's other festivals going on, so maybe some of the all-star kirtaniers that usually come weren't here, but still really nice. Kamaniya and Keshwachari was here. Some of you may know them, Arundhati. Shamdas, a friend of mine, I invited him, and he was here in the afternoon. It's really nice. And also, ultimately, kirtan is bhakti. So even if the people weren't as expert as usual, at least some of them weren't. Some of them were very good. Still, that spirit, and many people stayed up all night to celebrate Ekadasi, 11th day after the full and new moon, which is an auspicious day to increase one's chanting and hearing. The strictest way to follow it, and it's done by very strict Vaishnavas, is they do nirjal. They
one second here. One second.
The strictest mode is they do nirjal. That means they don't even take water and stay up all night and don't even sleep the next day. Amadavi titti bhakati janani, Ekadasi, following days of Lord Hari, give birth to devotion. And of course, there's different standards. But generally, the idea is to decrease your material needs and increase your spiritual practices. And I found it that it works. I'm always looking for small things one can do that have significant impact on one's, you know, spiritual life, like like just avoiding criticism or reducing, you know, controlling one's eating. But I found that Akadasi is extremely effective to increase devotion and ultimately in the path of bhakti, our ability to focus and increase on our spiritual practices won't just be determined by our gyan or our discrimination and self-control and renunciation, but in our positive attraction for Krishna, and the level of our absorption will have more to do with the taste we have, the attraction we have for Krishna and Krishna's service and devotional activities, than simply our material nature of self-discipline, although that's extremely important. So I find it edifying myself to kind of try to observe it in different ways. But a godbrother of mine, you may know him, Prajumna Prabhu, he told me that he used to stay up with one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj, and, you know, read books in his room, and that every Akadasi without fail, he would do Nirjal, stay up all night, and then not sleep the next day either. And I was kind of a little bit shocked how that was possible. And, you know, I asked him, Prajumna, you know, how do you do that? It just seems impossible. I mean, last night I had some idea. Well, let me stay up at night. But by about 1 o'clock in the morning, I was just conked. And I said, how does one do it? And Prajumna gave such a nice answer. He said, like anything else, it's a muscle that you have to exercise. And I like the analogy that we can actually increase our standards. We can do things. We can increase our capacity and ability by actually practice and detachment. By, you know, doing the activity, even if it's a little bit difficult, and cultivating a little bit dispassion in an appropriate way. So by practicing, we gain strength. And I know during Kartik, when I take an increased vow for chanting, and many people experience this, that doing four times as much becomes easier than what you normally do, because of the strength and attraction you get from engaging in spiritual activities. So this family here, they just told the 24-hour kirtan, and a lot of people stay up at night, and explaining why in the background I'm hearing this distraction. Just an interesting thing, because people did give me feedback. They occasionally like me to tell them any interesting things that I'm doing. Some of you know I do a seminar on the psychology of karma, where I get the information of people, some of the people attending the class. One second. One second. Excuse all that, but just needed to shift the phone in another mood. So what I do is I get the astrological information, the birth times of people, and then when I come to the class, I tell people something about themselves. I work with a nice astrologer based on their birth information. And it's usually startling because it's usually quite accurate. Even sometimes we say things that are predicted in people's lives, certainly their characteristics, their personality, and it's startling because this information, because all the person who made the predictions did was have the birth time. So it means that information was known at birth. So it opens up a very, very interesting question of what is that force that can move the world to give someone particular experiences. In other words, that force knew at one's birth that in 40 years you're going to have a particular experience. So what is that force? That, so it really opens people's eyes up to a Vishesh Purush, a very special omnipotent soul, basically God. And of course from there comes the question is, what is the purpose of this force? And knowing the purpose of that force, how can you maximize the experience that that force is giving you to elevate your consciousness? So just a very interesting thing. I did this recently, and there was one lady that attended a few of my lectures upstate, and we had her reading done, and it was, you know, a couple of months ago, and it said in July you will be coming into some money. And when I read that, she was just startled, and after class she came to me. She said, you know, I haven't been doing that well financially, struggling, you know, in the last few years and things like that. But it's interesting you said that, because she told me, she says, you know, I went to, I think she went to school with John F. Kennedy Jr., and she was a very, very close platonic friend of his, and she had many, many pictures of her and John F. Kennedy Jr., and she said she finally decided to sell the rights of the pictures so that they can be published. So, and she said, I got paid a very, very nice sum, which I'll receive in July. So I was told by Raghunath that in last month's People's Magazine, this lady's pictures and John F. Kennedy were there, and then she was on the Larry King live show. So it's a very effective, it's scientific. People want scientific. Well, this is scientific. You can make a controlled experiment. And it would indicate some divine force. Beyond, you know, the present, mystical in the sense, it's not mystical to someone who has a deeper sense of metaphysics as expressed in the Vedic literature and actually knows the science that's outlined there of how the modes of nature work. But it's definitely something mystical that can be shown, at least beyond the present level of scientific kind of inquiry. Okay, let's get to our wonderful story now of Narada Muni, a great saint. And he's on this search for beautiful people, and real beautiful people are loving people. Real beautiful people are people who think of the pleasure of others before they think of their own. Beautiful people are those who see the world in terms of others' desires rather than seeing the world in terms of their own. Of course, we don't neglect our desires. We have to function in the world, and we have every right to, in an appropriate way, fulfill our desires. But that's the basic mode. And we know that. We know that those type of people, they're saints, and how much we respect them. And on the other hand, we know when we're in conflict with people who see the world according to their own desires and therefore deal with us in that egotistical way, how uncomfortable it is. So we're getting this view of Narada Muni, who's certainly a saint, a very elevated saint. And because he's an elevated saint and has that spirit of devotion and love and selflessness, he's on a journey to find the people who have that to the greatest degree. And, you know, it can't be stressed enough how important the association with such people are. one of the most powerful factors in transforming the mind is the association with those who are selfless, because there's a transference of their qualities. First, that type of person, just from the standpoint of their mind is in a particular condition. And we know from this subtle metaphysics that's described in the classical Indian philosophy, is there's an influence or effect of the mode. So if someone is coming to that point of goodness in his own consciousness, it's going to exert a very powerful influence on our mind to transform our mind to very, very higher modes. But also, if you have some respect for those type of people, and respect for someone means you respect their mind, you respect their thoughts, their personality. And when you respect someone's personality, and you have relationship with that person, idolize them, but not in a silly way. Then you're taking their desire as your own, and it transforms you. So this is a very relevant story. And we get the core characteristics of one who has that devotion in his heart. Devotion is an energy of God. It's a very wonderful thing. We also are composed of that energy of God, but it's also an energy of God that nourishes our soul, and it's God's pleasure potency, which is love. And therefore, we offer that back to God. And it's a very, 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 very beautiful thing. It's described like an iron rod is in fire. When an iron rod is in fire, then the iron rod becomes like fire. It becomes heat and light. So similarly, our mind, when it's imbued with this devotion, this internal potency of God, it assumes those qualities. And such a person radiates with selflessness and devotion. So in the search of Narada Muni, we're getting to see a different ashraya or receptacles of that divine potency, and the symptoms of such persons. And so Narada is searching, and in his search, we know that he went to Hanuman, who, in his humility, began to glorify the Pandavas. And the last glorification of the Pandavas was very, very interesting, because Hanuman, in wanting to encourage Narada, if you are looking for the topmost recipient of Krishna's mercy, for the most loving and selfless personalities, and Hanuman humbly, don't see me, see them. But he didn't want Narada to be confused. And it's a basic misconception of spiritual life that we'll all struggle with. And the misconception of spiritual life, and it's the misconception that Krishna is removing from our Arjuna, is that spiritual life means renunciation. It may be a symptom of spiritual life, but it's not renunciation. It's devotion. And for devotion, one may keep many things if they can be used in God's service. So if someone is taking a position of rulership for that service, he may have to keep many opulences that are generally aspired for and possessed by very materialistic people. So one can be confused. This person is not spiritual because of his environment, which is surrounded with wealth and beauty and so many things, so many opulences, which are the aspiration of the materialistic person. And generally, because there's such a strong correlation between what your consciousness is and what your environment is, one can easily misunderstand a devotee who, on behalf of service, either the service of satisfying one's core basic needs or the service of using those assets to help others in spiritual life by making them peaceful or organizing them, you may misunderstand that. And that's a basic point. We see even in the story of Gadadhar, one of the Panchatattvas, who's Radharani and Gaur-lila, when he's taken to see Pundarik Vidyaniti, and, you know, because he also, this should be our aspiration. Who are those devotees that have the mercy of God? Where are they? And we should seek them out. And that's probably one of the most important things of our spiritual life. Because that they will have influence on us. And because they have influence on, they'll have influence on people, even if those people are not aware of who they are. That's the potency of bhakti within the heart. But if you actually know and you seek those people, they can transform your life. It's probably the most powerful transformatory object, although it's not just an object, are those saintly persons. So Narada, Hanuman wants to make sure, do not think that these people are so materialist. I gave the example of Pundarik Vidyaniti. He was the emblem of opulence. And therefore, initially, Gadadhar said, why are you taking me to see such a person who is just in such opulence as Pundarik Vidyaniti. But as soon as a verse was chanted about the glories of Krishna, the person just, this Pundarik Vidyaniti completely lost his composure. And then Gadadhar thought, oh, now I've made an offense. I've misunderstood. How many offenses we can make by false assumptions about people. We make some assumptions based on one aspect of their life. Oh, and then understand something completely different. So he made that assumption, and then later he took initiation from him, part of it to relieve the offense he felt for such a great devotee. So anyway, Hanuman is also explaining in terms of the Pandavas, don't misunderstand them. They're just accepting this wealth for service. And therefore, even though they're surrounded by such opulence, it doesn't have any potency to allure them into any egotistical or self-centered consciousness. Because that's not their interest. Our interests are in our heart. And they're called samskaras. They're our tastes. And we know, if we look in our heart, we know we have different tastes. Some of our tastes are for things that are not good for us. Some of our tastes are for things that are good for us. So, and generally, when you have these tastes, you fulfill them externally. But here in this case, even though they had the opulence of the world, they had no taste for it. Their only taste was for Krishna, and this is what happens in the process of bhakti, by chanting and absorbing oneself in the holy name, in the service of Krishna, then thoughts of devotion eventually overpower and flood the mind. And that's what one's mind is, and there's no other interest, and that's the condition of the Pandavas. So therefore, there's a tremendous dichotomy between their environment and their heart. In the sense that their environment, they didn't assume this power and wealth and opulence and thrones and followers and so many else. They didn't. It's not a product of their desires. It's a product of their. It's not a product of their selfish desire. It's a product of their desire to serve. And then he also mentioned their beautiful, their family, and there was so much love for their family. But that love for their family was also in relationship to God, because the family of the Pandavas, Yudhisthira, his wife, his brothers, everything, there was so much love. And that was beautifully presented in that last verse. Anything or anyone associated with Krishna is dear to a pure Vaishnava. When Vaishnavas come together in either casual or lifetime relationship, they naturally develop love for one another. They relish great pleasure tasting the rasas of Krishna consciousness. And in its purest state, it's a very high form of love, because you're actually loving who the person is. What we are eternally is servants of God, and when one's acting on that platform, on that natural platform, is affection on that natural platform, your affection is for something that's very, very real. It's the actual person, not just the covering of the person. So it's a very, very deep and satisfying love. And that's what a Vaishnav society is. A Vaishnav society is a society where there is loving exchanges. That's why one of the main instructions of Upadeshamrita is Dadati Pritagrinati Guyam Adyachi Pritchati Bhunte Bhojyate, that Vaishnavas are exchanging, always exchanging love. They're inquiring in confidence, they're explaining in confidence, they're giving gifts, accepting gifts, giving prasadam, accepting prasadam. It's a society where people are always putting others first, and they're happy about that. Where in the gross materialist, to the extent that overpowers our hearts, we become dissatisfied when others are doing well, and we're more concerned with our own ego and desires than others. So naturally, that becomes conflict. And in a Vaishnav society where that becomes prominent, it's ceasing to become a Vaishnav society. And it won't attract others because they already have that. So here, Narada, he's convinced now, Hanuman's cleared his doubts, and he moves enthusiastically, overwhelmed. Harsha Bhara. Bhara means great. Harsha, joy. It's great joy, because this is actually the pleasure of the heart. This is what his taste is. This is what his taste is. His taste is for Krishna. I described the concept of samskara, that the experiences we have for pleasure, they leave a memory of pleasure, and whatever caused that experience, we seek. Well, a Vaishnava is when his heart is flooded with memories of pleasure for Krishna. And when when anyone is in contact with the object of his pleasure, they become joyful. That's why, you know, people in ordinary society, they cultivate a good experience in relationship to money. When they get money, oh, I can enjoy. And therefore, they're always seeking that very, very intensely. And therefore, when someone wins the lottery, he has joy, because the memory, the object of his desire, is being fulfilled. But for Vaishnava, his pleasure is an advanced devotee. That's what he's looking for. That's his memory of pleasure. That's his taste. We can say that samskaras are taste. That's his taste. And it's a great taste. And it's the greatest pleasure and the greatest experience. And therefore, it's the greatest longing. And therefore, the greatest satisfaction when one achieves that. So we see in Narada, who's the embodiment of a devotee, how much attraction he has for God and God's devotees, and think, so he's enthusiastic. He's enthusiastic for those things. And therefore, it says, Akanta, overwhelmed with what? Harsha, with an excess of joy. And then that, when you're overwhelmed for that excess of joy, then you express it in your body. Sanartanam. And therefore, he's dancing. He's so happy, he's dancing. And because he's dancing, and he's so happy, then gata vavam, he's running to that object of joy. It's just a shift in consciousness. It's just placing your enthusiasm someplace else, and then you're successful in spiritual life. And there are many stories in the Shastra of someone who is overcome harsha bada, by an excess of akanta joy, by a material object. And the tragedy of that is if you're just seeking, your taste is just momentary pleasure, it will not move your mind to well-being. So you may get the momentary pleasure, but ultimately it's moving your mind to a condition of less well-being and satisfaction. We see that with people who have addictions. Although they're getting momentary pleasure, it's actually making them more miserable. So there's a lot of things in the Shastra where this enthusiasm is misplaced, and then a great saint with powerful words says, well, if you'll just transfer it to God, then how successful will you be? It gives a person a frame of reference. Do the same activity, the same enthusiasm, but have that for God, and how much your life will change. There's that story of Bivamangala Thakur, who initially was such a rogue that when his father died and at the funeral, and they have so many ceremonies and they're burning the body. I've been to many of those in Vrindavan where a Vaishnav dies, a Vaishnavi dies, and we take them to the bank of the Ganga, bank of the Jamuna, and they get, you know, a couple of mounds of wood and pile up this wood and then put the body and cover it. And then first the body is bathed and then put on there, and then you circumambulate it with a torch and then you light it and this can... He was just telling, you know, quick, he get this done quickly. He was such a rogue because he was attached to the prostitute Chintamani. His desire was so overwhelming. When your desires, they overcome, they surpass your intelligence, your better judgment. Buddha intelligence makes a decision on not just what you like, but what is good for you, what is best. What will give you ultimate pleasure, not just immediate pleasure. And a foolish person, if he's overcome with some addiction, he satisfies that addiction despite what the result it is for him. And you know, we may not have gross addictions, or we may, I don't know. But we have different impulses, different desires, which overcome our better judgment. We know it won't lead us to a better condition of well-being and happiness. So Bivamangala Thakur was at such a condition of mind that he was so attached to this prostitute that he tried to rush the funeral ceremony and then ran to see this prostitute. And then there was such pouring rain and a storm, and he had to get there, and the river was rushing, and he just jumped in the river and he thought he was going to drown and grabbed onto a log, and it turned out to be a dead body. And then he ran to the house of Chintamani, and he wanted to scale the wall because the rain, no one could hear inside. And he started climbing on this vine, and it turned out to be a huge snake, which he had to throw away. And finally, when he wound up at the prostitute Chintamani, who God spoke through, looked at him in his disheveled, pathetic state and said, you know, if you had the same enthusiasm for God as you do for your selfish sex desire, you would be such a great Vaishnava. And somehow it stuck in his heart. That's the power. It stuck in his heart, and he became famous Vaishnava. Went to Vrindavan and is one of the great Vaishnavas. So Narada, he has this enthusiasm, and he's racing to their capital. And now we'll get the vision again. So now he's seeing on his journey, he saw Hanuman. Hanuman said, "No, I'm not the best. You go see the Pandavas." And now he's moving towards them, and through his eyes, we'll get the vision of the activities and consciousness of great Vaishnavas. Tavat kasyapa yagasya vipat patasya vamishat krishnam anaya pasyami iti mantraya tasukai dhamarajena tamvari tita praptam mahamunim nishamya bratvibhi matra patni bhischa sahotitam. Dhamaraj Yudhisthira, so he's watching this, was just then consulting his inner circle about how to see Krishna by bringing him on the pretext of some sacrifice or calamity. When the king heard that the great sage was at the door, he had once stood up with his brothers, mothers, and wives. So here, what does he see? He sees Yudhisthira is with his inner circle, and he's meeting about how to get Krishna in their company. That's, of course, in this particular instance, he's on the planet, he has relationship with Krishna. And it's very interesting, in the commentary, it says, in general, the Supreme Lord's devotees encounter two kinds of danger. One created by the Lord to proclaim the devotee's glory. So sometimes Krishna wants to exhibit, he wants to glorify the devotee, and he puts the devotee in great challenges. We probably can think in terms of our own lives or in the lives of others that we respect. But first, we can think in our own lives how our challenges, our difficulties that we had may have allowed us to exhibit and demonstrate our sacrifice or our love, our devotion for Krishna. That despite obstacles, we've proceeded in devotional service. Or if we don't have that experience, we may see another person. And then we can see those difficulties that they have as given by God, either as an impetus or test to strengthen their devotional service, or in the great devotees, Krishna uses the great devotees to demonstrate what it's like to be a devotee and meet the challenge of life. But here it's mentioning another type of danger. It's simulated by the Lord's devotees. They want that danger. They want God. God is their goal, their priority. It's their highest priority. And they'll sacrifice anything for God. Just like Chintamani, Bimbal Mangalad Thakur, sex desires, sex life was his goal. And he'll sacrifice everything. We see people sacrifice their whole love for some drug that they're addicted to or some vice. Same way, the devotee will sacrifice anything for Krishna because he has that taste or attraction. And that attraction is to love Krishna and to serve Krishna. So he's bringing here, and so what does he see? He sees he's meeting with his people. And the other thing is, despite whatever he's doing or meeting, when the representative of Krishna comes, then they stop everything. Even when one is doing puja or worship of God, if a devotee comes, one may stop that worship and receive the devotee. So we see, and when that consciousness is not there, it's very indicative of something wrong spiritually, when you're not moved to respect the Vaishnava. When you take the association of the Vaishnava casually, then there's an indication of something wrong. Just like there's the example of Indra, who's the king of heaven, Tribhuvana Aishwarya, has so much opulence. And unlike the Pandavas, it has potency. Indra is somehow the king of heaven. He has some weakness, and therefore when he has opulence, he begins to look at that opulence in terms of the way we relate to the world is three things. We relate to the world by how we feel about it, how we judge it, and what our relationship is. So if the false conception of the self, the ahankara, is not properly fixed in the conception of servant, when one encounters personal opulence, one will look at it in the relationship of possessiveness that forces in one a sense of one's own dominance and control. And that's the danger of great opulence. You think you're better than others. You think that you're better than others. And that's such a danger in spiritual life. I keep my famous Walmart example. When I went upstate in the Walmart and I saw that, my God, the degradation of American culture, of junk food and mode of ignorance and the how people become almost I fasted all day yesterday. My mind doesn't remember things. I still haven't eaten. They become so disfigured and grotesque. And, you know, I thought, you know, the first thing in my mind, which was, is to, you know, almost make fun of it. But what is that? That's an expression of my own desire to be the Lord and Master and the aggressive tendency that manifests over those that are less fortunate. So when you have opulence and wealth, if you have the wrong relationship to it, if it only feeds your superiority, it will lead to a certain type of aggression that will degrade your consciousness and bring you further away from a sense of well-being. You see this sometimes, you know, in New York, if people are exceptionally beautiful and, you know, or exceptionally popular, exceptionally famous, they have something about them that scorns others. You know, and it's very, you know, and therefore it does say sometimes that when God is merciful to someone, and then he takes that away. He does take it away. That's what death and old age means, but he takes it away. Your material, Prabhupada said, your material protective agents will fail you. And that's God's mercy, because it's having an effect or an influence. It can't have an effect on the Pandavas because they don't have that desire in their heart. And therefore it's described that a Paramahamsa, so there's a great man that becomes a Paramahamsa, then he can be in a room of naked women and beautiful women and not be affected. Why? Because that taste is not in their heart. Their taste is not in their heart. But Indra, when he had all that opulence, that affected him. He didn't have the right relationship to it. He became bewildered. I am great. I am powerful. I am better than others. And the first symptom of that is you don't respect the saintly people. So his guru, Brihaspati, came into the assembly, and Indra didn't even notice him. He didn't even recognize him. He didn't stand up. He didn't offer respect. You become bewildered with your own position, a little opulence, a little knowledge. It says that every person will be affected, knowingly or unknowingly, in the association of a highly evolved soul, except those who have a little knowledge and are proud, because it creates some misconception of yourself, or your desire is to be the Lord and Master. Therefore, you don't want to recognize anyone who is. So dangerous. It's such a dangerous thing. And the illusion can attack us at any moment by any little knowledge we have. It's called utsaimayi, one of the symptoms of anishtita bhakti, of bhakti which is not fixed, is one develops a little devotion and thinks he's a great devotee. A little something in any field. Someone begins Sanskrit, he knows a little something, he thinks he's a scholar. Someone knows, he thinks he's great. And it impedes bhakti. So therefore, when that offense was committed of not showing the proper respect to Guru, then Indra lost all his powers. And that's a fact. So here we see the opposite of Yudhisthira, and it's confirming what Hanuman says. This Yudhisthira has the opulence of the whole world. He is the emperor of the world. But when the mendicant or the devotee comes in, he offers the greatest, he immediately stands up, he interrupts what he's doing, and with all his brothers, mothers, I'm trying to access, it's not working, but there's just so many examples I know of great people who immediately, despite their opulence, their wealth, their knowledge, when they meet a great devotee. I'm trying to remember stories, but that Dr. Fakir Mohan, Indrajumna Swami, he likes Indrajumna Swami a lot, and he's a very elevated soul. And Indrajumna Swami's, best friend came to visit him from high school. And then we went to class, and that Dr. Fakimon was living next door to me at the time, so we went to class. And, Indrajumna Swami introduced his friend, big, tall, like Indrajumna Swami, big, tall, American. And his friend, Indrajumna Swami introduced him in a very nice way. And his friend said something humble and self-deprecatory. And then and Dr. Fakir Mohan immediately said, something that, if you're a devotee, then you're better than the President of the United States. if you have the proper consciousness and respect. Anyway, this is what he's seeing there, and then we see again enthusiasm, because it's not just Narada as the saint that has the enthusiasm, but Yudhisthira. So he says, it says Sasa Brahman eagerly, Dabata Yudhisthira was rushing. So what was Yudhisthira? Again, he had that taste. Narada had that. This is what a devotee is. We rush towards those who are selfless and pure, because we know the greatest pleasure and the maximum benefit will come in their association. So as Yudhisthira eagerly rushed forward to meet him, Narada came close and bowed down. Narada brought him into the assembly hall and with some effort made him accept the seat of honor. So We're learning about this exchange. Anybody like to ask a question? Or say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Gail.
Gail, every week that you speak, you become more and more gentle.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you're seeing it that way.
Well, over the years. Okay.
I wanted to tell you that the Super Soul experiences continue.
Really?
Really.
What's the Super Soul experience today?
Was that, from toward the beginning of the class, I wanted to find an excuse to bring up this instruction that you often say, which is that when Krishna, when Krishna favors his devotee, he takes away everything. But that does not mean that he, you know, that as soon as you become a devotee, you will become bankrupt, you know. And I wanted you to speak something about that, but, you know, I was going to bring it up even though I really couldn't, like, totally justify it, you know, based on the class, you know.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you brought it up yourself, you know.
What point did I make so you can repeat it?
Yeah, well, normally what you say on that point is that, you know, what that means is that Krishna will take away the things in your life that impede your self-realization.
And I also say he can also give things
if you need.
Mm-hmm. But he can also take,
Yeah, and the reason why I had wanted you to speak on that was because, it seemed like a stretch to get that meaning just out of those words, you know, in isolation, you know. If you say, oh, when Krishna, how do you go from saying Krishna, when Krishna favors you, he takes away everything, how do you go from there to the meaning that, well, you know, he doesn't necessarily take away everything, you know. It just seems like, you know, superficially, you know, it can seem like a contradiction or like a leap, you know?
Yeah, what it says is actually that Krishna is our protector. That's one of the symptoms of faith. When you actually have an experience in faith and trust in Krishna as your shelter, and one of the symptoms, he will protect you. And protection means, so that's the other way. So you say protection. Krishna's protecting me. Well, then how did this devotee die, right? You know, is Krishna protecting? But the protection means he'll do what's best. So it means we should have full confidence if we're in danger that Krishna can come and completely take her out of that danger. And if he doesn't, then he's doing something else for our benefit, even if he arranges that we die. But the real principle is Krishna does what's best. And therefore, most of the times, as I remember I was telling, most of the times, because we become so attached to something external that nurtures in us a sense of egotism or superiority, that Krishna takes that away. And he will take that away. You know, so that's going to, he will take that away. If that's the impediment to your devotional service, then he will arrange that your beauty fails, or your managerial expertise fails, or that your brilliance, you know, fails, your intelligence fails. You know, you're so proud, and then all of a sudden you get defeated in debate by the taxi driver in New York, you know,
mm-hmm.
which happened to one devotee once. Came back to the temple all bent out of shape. The taxi driver defeated him in argument. So, you know, it can be taken away, but it doesn't also mean that, too, that sometimes Krishna, for a particular person, will give something else, will give more. But generally, he does what's best. But a lot of times he gives more to those who will not be affected by it. And therefore will use it in Krishna's service, you know. Okay, Gail, well, thank you.
Okay.
Anybody else like to say hello or ask a question? See who's out there.
Hello, Maharaj. This is Malone again.
Malone, very nice. You know, I haven't touched base with you in a while. Is it possible we could speak on the phone?
Yes, that'd be wonderful.
Why don't you just, you got my email?
I do.
Just send me your phone number. Maybe, you may be busy or not, but maybe later I can call you or something. Or maybe, is that okay?
Yeah, that would be wonderful.
Okay.
I'd really enjoy that. I did have a quick question about your lecture.
Please.
From your lecture. At one point you mentioned that beautiful people are those who look at the world in terms of others' desires and not their own.
Yeah.
And I'm curious how a devotee, the purest of devotees, would react in the face of someone verbally criticizing and almost verbally abusing you. What is the proper reaction that would be, I mean, if this person is acting that way out of some unknown desires on their part, and is a beautiful
right.
person, you know, you're considering their desires over your own, which may be to...
Yeah.
yourself or to run away. What is the proper way to react?
Right, right. Well, of course, there's psychological debilitation, like codependency, where one accepts a level of abuse that's not good for them. I mean, you know, so that's not healthy. I mean, we have to, it says, you know, how much do we take for ourselves? We take as much as we need. And so that means something like we don't live to eat, but we eat to live. We don't live to enjoy, but we enjoy to live. So in the same sense, we don't live for self-respect, but we need self-respect to live. So we have a right, and it's not selfish, to have a certain humble demand. A certain humble demand for our own needs. Otherwise, we can't function to serve God and serve others.
Mm.
Does that make sense to you?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. We need to... It's just like a teacher. You know, the teacher should be humble and serve the students. But they have a right, you know, like in a classroom, they have a right for their own needs to be met to do that service of a certain decorum, a certain, you know. So, yeah, that's a misconception, too, that we neglect our own needs, because there's a difference between desires that are required to keep the mind and body together, and desires that are selfish. So I think we should definitely make that. And a person has can have a certain. Of course, you know, if someone just criticizes one, and it's not like a relationship or something, someone says something. You know, a Vaishnava may say, "Oh yes, I'm full of faults. Thank you." You know, that's different from being in a relationship.
Right.
You know, where it's abusive and debilitating. You know, if it's just a comment, then it's not going to affect one psychologically. But one has to live in a situation, you know, a boss, a marriage, a friendship, or something, where it's psychologically debilitating. Then that's not God's service. To just have to accept it. Of course, it's always good toleration, you know, but there are limits. That's my point. Okay?
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay. I'd like to speak to you sometime today. If you can just, are you near a computer now?
I am.
Just send me an email with your number. I know you may not be in when I call you, but we'll just arrange a time because I think I haven't spoken to you or seen you in. By the way, I'm going to Washington at the end of the month. I know you live in Delaware now, so I don't know if...
Hari Kirtan told me I'm very excited. There's like a 10% chance I may be in California at the end of August, but if not, I will absolutely be there.
Okay. And how far are you from Rehoboth Beach?
I'm actually not very familiar with the area, but I can ask Mike. He'll know. I don't think it's very, very far.
It's sometimes, yeah. Okay.
Anyway, I'll hopefully I can talk to you later and we can touch base. That would be really nice. Thank you. I'm
okay.
Really happy to hear from you.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear from you too.
Thank you. Yeah. Anybody else like to say hello? Maybe all the people are downstairs doing kirtan today.
What is that? Maharaj.
Who's that?
This is Shastra Das at my vacancies.
How far is that? That lady lives in Wilmington, Delaware. How far is that from you?
70 miles.
Oh, it's quite far. It's almost closer to New Jersey where she lives then, huh?
Philadelphia. It's 20 or 30 miles south of Philadelphia.
Okay, so it's a little shorter than Philadelphia. Okay. Because I thought, maybe she can visit, for Prabhupada's appearance day. But I'll speak to her personally. Okay, Shastra, also, I'm going to have to call you later today about the Puri thing. I don't know if you got the email.
Yes, everything's great. We can talk.
Okay, I'll call you later. Thanks, Shastra. Anybody else like to say hello?
I did not want to my humble obeisance.
Who's that?
Amia.
Oh, Amia.
Thank you for class this morning. Wonderful class.
Well, thank you all for coming on. It's every time we give class, it poses a different challenge. And anyway, okay, thank you, Amia. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Bhai Maharaj.
Who's that?
Mother Indrani.
Who is it?
Indrani. Mother Indrani.
I can't hear you. Say again. Say one more time.
Mother Indrani.
Mother Indrani. Oh, thank you. Thank you. So nice.
Thank you for the class.
Well, thank you. I feel honored that you are on the Sangha. Thank you. So nice to hear from you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Who's that?
Jagavati. Hare Krishna, thank you so much.
All right, well, thank you. Yeah. If anybody's around on August 1st in Gopi Shores, Yogi is going to join me. We're going to have a nice swing-type festival, a little kata and kirtan there. And, of course, they always have great prasadam, so... If you can get away, please come. Anybody else? Okay. Then thank you all. It was great. I'm gonna go downstairs now and I guess give class at the end of the function today. Okay? Thank you.